ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Monday. Corbin and Ben with the Carlton champion Mark Murphy, as always, the start of your weekly offering here on ABC AFL Daily. Of course, on Tuesdays, Bob Murphy joins me to pull apart all the footy shows that set the agenda in the footy world. Later in the week on Thursday, Brett Delidio's along to preview the full round. On Saturday, it's the award-winning AFL Saturday with Luke Ball and Mick Malthouse, and then Ben Cameron and Daniel Harford tie a bow on the whole thing on Sunday night. So that's what you can get right here on ABC AFL Daily. If you're not listening to all five episodes, you've got the opportunity to jump in the podcast feed right here and catch up on what you're missing. But for now, let's get straight into AFL Monday. Scott Pendlebury, high on the agenda, of course, the soon-to-be record-breaking Magpie, soon-to-be record-breaking footballer as he goes past Brent Harvey's games record on Saturday. Here it is, AFL Monday.
Picked up by Draper of the Lions from the wing. Kicks to an open 50. Cameron V. Humphreys in Indigenous round. Charlie gets there first. Dribbles a miracle from the pocket. And forever that they replay highlights of Sir Doug Nicholls' round. Charles Cameron has guaranteed immortality with that brilliant goal.
Well, I'm not massively like a reflective person, so you know I've stuck to a process that I've run through for a long period of time, and you know, if anything, it's a bit of a challenge for me this week to make sure I can, you know, stick to that, and acknowledge the, you know, the champions that turn up for this stuff today, and you know, the occasion. But most importantly, I really want to get a win.
Carroll inside 50. The Blues are on the winners list for the first time since round one, and Josh Fraser starts his role as caretaker coach as a winner.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
Here we are on the heels of round 10 of the AFL Premiership season. Scott Pendlebury, the record breaker, the Dons and the Roos on the back of poor defeats. Carlton 1-0 under their caretaker coach, plus all the winners and losers out of round 10 of the AFL season. Corbin Middlemass with you in our Melbourne studios here in ABC South Bank. Ben Cameron's across the desk from me as always. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. The Blues might have won, but I've still got a lot of questions for Mark Murphy, so I'm looking forward to that.
Won't have to wait long. He's here, the 300 gamer, the man who captained the Carlton Football Club at 2011 best player, as voted by the coaches, the people that that matter most in the game of Australian rules football. Mark Murphy's here. Hello, Murph.
Great to be with you both. Yeah, looking forward to tonight. I thought I was going to have an easy night in tonight, Benny, but obviously not. You've got more Carlton questions for me.
I do. Just about the future of certain players, whether they're still going to be in navy blue. You've come in dressed like a ninja tonight. You've got
black on black.
Black on black on black.
Nice. I like it. AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy, in the house. Your calls on 1300 222 774. We've got a whole lot to work through, plus our Mad Mondays later. I think there's been another mention of unicorns in the AFL landscape too, which for regular listeners, you'll know all about that. We might as well start with Scott Pendlebury. He had his press conference today. I understand that that there's plenty of people out there will be feel like we've done a lot of Scott Pendlebury conversation, and there has been lots of conversation about, you know, where the profits are going to go, the gold number on the back. But hopefully this week we get the chance to celebrate the player. 432 games down, he'll go past Brent Harvey to break the all-time games record on Saturday at the MCG. And of course, you can hear that game right here as well on 774 ABC Melbourne. Here is Scott Pendlebury speaking earlier today at the MCG.
You know, when you say like no major injuries, if I listed them off, you'd be surprised. You know, I've broken both legs twice. I've had a shoulder eco, fractured my jaw, broken my nose probably six times. So like there's injuries for sure. But yeah, luck, mum and dad, good genetics. And a good club and a good management program.
So in 1902, Ben, a guy by the name of Charlie Panham became the first player ever to play 100 games. And from there, the game's record in the old VFL and now the AFL competition changed 10 times in 72 years. In the last 52 years, it has changed on only four occasions. So the lineal passing of who holds the game's record at any one time, just four times in the last 52 years. Pendlebury will be the 15th ever to get there. So we had Kevin Bartlett in the 1980 final series. Michael Tuck got there 10 years later, held it for 26 years before Brett Harvey went past it in 2016. And now 10 years on, Scott Pendlebury will become the first man to 433. So our big question here, who is next most likely to challenge Pendlebury for the AFL Games record?
Yeah, so I just want to ask Murph before I jump into that. I mean, you guys were taken in the same draft, which you spoke about on Saturday, and you thought Corbin was having a shot at you. You went pick one. Pendles went pick five, I think. Dale Thomas, two.
Yep.
And Xavier Ellis, three. I'm not sure about who
Josh
went.
Josh Kennedy was four.
Josh Kennedy, Sydney, Josh Kennedy?
No, Carlton. Carlton Josh. West Coast.
Yeah, wow. So I guess the point is your last season was in 2021. Like, how impressive is it that 2026, he's still going around now, 5 years later?
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, to think that, it seemed like a lifetime ago that I've played AFL football, and for Scott to be able to still keep doing it, but doing it at a high level is amazing. He talked about some of his injuries. That's not too many over 20 years, I wouldn't have thought. But he has been injured, six broken noses, a couple of hairline fractures, which I think a couple of them kept him out of a few finals games too. So you've got to have a bit of luck, but his preparation has been second to none from what I've heard from players who've played a lot of football with him. You need to be playing in finals too quite a bit to be able to get to this number as well. It's probably an extra season or two compared to some players who don't play too much finals. Is someone going to break it? I think records are made to be broken. Someone's going to break it at some point.
Yeah.
But I think we're still a way off that occurring. I think you probably only know when you're within probably maybe three seasons if someone's a chance to get there. But you need a bit of luck on your side. You need your team to be performing as well. I think a lot of players who have played a lot of football get to the end. And if they're a side that isn't performing that well, it's easier to hang them up. But, yeah, you've got to get full credit, I think, mentally too, to be able to get through that many seasons of football.
If you've got a Scott Pendlebury memory or you want to answer that question, who's the next most likely to go past it? Will he play on next year? 1-300-222-774, the talkback number, AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben and the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy.
I think the guys who have really had longevity have been generally spindly types. So, I mean, Brent Harvey clearly breaks that mold. But you look at Tuck, even Burgoyne, Bartlett and Fletcher were all pretty wiry sort of characters. Pendles has bulked up a little bit.
Even a bloke I played a lot of football with, I reckon finished too early, was Kate Simpson. So on a similar look and feel as what you would say, like sort of bandy. He wasn't big. He was pretty wiry. He probably only got to about 68 kilos in terms of like pure weight.
Really?
Maybe I've made that up. Maybe that's a bit shallow.
Probably. He's pretty already, light.
I reckon, so he would have started mid-60s and got to maybe just over 70. But he was one of those guys who he threw himself into contests and would just bounce out of them. So guys like that who, it's almost they're like elastic men, aren't they, in a way in which they're able to play this game. And, those types of players who just seem to just always be able to just perform but also do it at a really high level over a long period of time.
I'm not sure how many of the current active guys will be able to challenge this record at the moment. The guys that have played sort of upwards of 300 games at the moment. So Danger's the next best, 366. I mean, this is highly likely or possibly his last year. Sidebottom, 363. Jack Darling, 329. Luke Parker's played 325 games. Dane Zorko, 300 and change, and Taylor Walker the same. None of them are going near it. The only active player who's up there that I can make a case for is Marcus Bontempelli, who's 22nd on the list of active players. 268. He's only missed 13 since his debut, the Bont. He's 30 at the moment, so he's missed on average one in every 20 games or so. So another 22 games a year, 7 years is 154. That gets him to 422. He might get to 400, but I don't think he's probably...
That's wild, isn't it?
...getting to Pendles, which is incredible.
Yeah. So for everything we've seen of Bond, he's got to basically play another seven completed seasons and then a little bit. So dip into an eighth season just to get to Pendles now. And Pendles has a chance to add, obviously, to his.
Yeah, that's right. I think you probably only you get to 350 to 370 and you can look at it and go, well, maybe this guy can go for another period of time. But his teammate at the moment, Jack Crisp, He played. He's played 280,
260 odd in a, 270 almost in a row.
Yeah, in a row. So he's showing that ability to just play week after week is something that very few can do.
So this is where I'd be looking. I'd be looking at the guys at the start of their career with the advances in sports science. So someone like a Harry Sheezel, for example, he's played 77 of a possible 79 games. So someone that's incredibly durable is going to play a lot of footy. You know, again, we're so far off even talking about that in that conversation, but I think it's when we never thought anyone would get to Tuck, and then we never thought anyone would get to Boomer, and now we've lived through it 10 years later. So who's to say in another 10 years we don't see it again?
I posed this question on the broadcast and I think on the podcast a few weeks ago, just quickly, Murph, before we go to the phones. Crisp's 270 consecutive or Pendle's 433 and counting, which is more likely to be broken?
I would say Pendle's record. Okay. Mm. I think that record from Crisp is unbelievable in this day and age. But going back to your last call too, Corbin, I think sports science and way in which it's come along, 23 games a season, there might be 24 soon enough.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to be the hope for someone to get there.
1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. That's 1-300-222-774. Scott Pendlebury with the game's record breaking game Saturday afternoon. You can catch it all, of course, from 4 here on 774 ABC Melbourne. Would they have won with him on the weekend, Murph?
Oh, that's a question, isn't it? I mean, the last couple of games he's missed, they've only just gone down by a kick. So has the occasion cost them a winning game? That's the one thing that they'll be asking themselves. But you look and go, well, maybe a 38-year-old, if he's making all the difference, then what hope do we have for the rest of the season? But we've seen the way he's performed, so it can't help, can it, when someone goes out of your side who's so good at directing and organising his teammates, let alone his influence with ball in hand. So maybe they have missed one there by leaving him out for one of those games.
Mark Murphy's in the house. AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben on 774 ABC Melbourne. The talkback number 1-300-222-774. Roy from Warrnambool is the first of our callers. Hello, Roy.
How are you?
We're well, thank you.
I think in the comparison between players who've played games as against players who have, how many minutes a player has played. So the first one to reach 100 would have played a lot more minutes than someone reaching 100 in the modern era. So we've got to take into account the fact that a player can be counted to play a full game, have a game, play in 10 minutes and then getting off. Where you couldn't have done that in the old days.
It's a good point. It's a good point. In the old days, you would play much closer to 100% game time, wouldn't you? Up until, we're only going back a couple of decades when, basically subs are only made almost like in soccer, that it was only in case of a break glass moment that someone would be interchanged off the ground, whereas nowadays, pretty fluid rotation.
Trevor from Hughesdale on the SMS line as well says, what about Craig Bradley? If you include his 98 Sandful games, brings him up to 473. This is from Trevor. He says, blinkered and biased AFL way of counting the most games, which I think those out west, Corbin, as you know, there was some queries raised around in the WAFL coaching games record for
John Todd. Yep.
Yeah, at Swan Districts and South Fremantle, whether that would have been more than Mick Malthouse if you included his WAFL games.
1-300-222-774. Roy, appreciate your call. Craig is in Frankston South. Hello, Craig.
Hey, just a quick one. With Pendlebury playing as well as he is still, could he go another season or two?
Ah, that's a good question. Will he go on next year, Murph? I know there was an article in the paper today. Jay Clark had the quote from him basically saying, hey, if I keep playing the way I'm playing, why not? Can you see him playing on into 2027?
I don't think he will play on next year. I think not that they're carrying him through this season, but in terms of just being able to manage him. But I suppose you've also got to look at the positives in which he does bring to that football club and the way in which he directs and organises. I spoke before about what he is so good at is ball in hand. He makes great decisions. He brings other players into the game. So that's what they've got to weigh up in the day. He's not going to ask for a huge fee to play. So is the benefit there of if he's going to play 14 or 15 games out of the 22 or 23?
Particularly if you've got a coaching group soft cap, which is, you've essentially paying Scotty Pendlebury a very small amount out of your playing salary cap to then be a virtual on-field coach and coach during the week, it might be worth it for Collingwood.
What do you reckon, Craig?
Look, I think the way he played Anzac Day and you know, he could go on and potentially even get closer to the 500 game mark.
Cool.
Gee. Well, it's aggressive to get to the 500, but I think I could see him playing on next year, but he'd almost play three out of every four. That's probably the way in which they'd be looking at it. And you look at the pros and the cons, and I mean, he's not going to be squeezing out a young player. I think that's the one thing that you don't want to do. But at the same time, too, I think he's going to enhance those young guys coming into the football club and helping them out in the field as another coach.
Yeah, they've got some list dynamics to work through as well. I mean, Crispy's 32, Elliott's 33, Membry's over 30, Sidebottom the same, and Howe 35, and then Pendlebury 38. So they have to transition the list at some point as well.
His Pendles today on how long he's got left?
I don't know if I get nervous, I just get excited. I think any time I get to play on this ground in front of the Collingwood Army, it just feels amazing, and they're just always so loud. So, yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't have many games left, so I'm going to enjoy them while I can.
Ah, don't have many left. He's 432 down. Let's see how many he's got to go, but appreciate the call. 1-300-222-774. That was Craig. Just a couple of numbers. There's going to be a heap of this during the week with stats and the amount of boxes that he's ticked across the course of his career. Here's a couple of my favourites, Murph. So he's played in front of 23 million fans. He's the most watched player in history. The next most, by the way, is 20 mil. So 3 million more people have watched Scott Pendlebury play football than anyone else in the history of the game. 226 of his 432 games have been played in front of crowds of over 50,000. So 226 games of just 50-plus K crowds. And he's played against six father-son pairings. That's not guys who went father-son. That is the dad and the son. Amazing in his career. So Sam and Luke Darcy, the Burgoynes, the Edwards, the West, the Davies, and the Motlops in his career, he's played against father and son.
That's pretty funny, isn't it?
It's incredible.
It's funny when you look at it like that, and then you almost look, you look at the NBA and see LeBron playing with his son as well. That's the next one for Scott to tick off.
Amazing. John in Greensboro is the next of our callers. Hello, John.
Yeah, just saying about Pendles. He's an inspiration. He's an inspiration for the young people. So when the young people go to watch Pendles play, you know, they aspire to a person like Pendles. He's got that legendary aspiration, and that's what they look at. That's what they see on the oval. That's what they watch, and they're sitting in the stand saying, "Do you know what? I'm going to be the next Pendles." That's what they're looking at. That's what we need to mature into the young people. Really important. Really important.
It's a great call, John. I appreciate that. He really hasn't put a foot wrong, has he, for 20-something years in the public eye? I can't remember one controversy involving Scott Pendlebury across the course of his career.
No, he's been incredible. He'll be a legend in the AFL in time too. So the players playing with him, and also those young Eagles players who are playing against him this weekend. I mean, what a thrill for some of those young guys playing in front of 90,000 plus at the MCG against the Pies. When was the last time that happened? It was on Grand Final Day. We all know how that ended.
Yeah.
And they'll be trying to emulate some of that, the Eagles boys. But saw how good Harley Reid was on the weekend. Put him head-to-head with Pendles for a little bit this weekend. Make everyone have a bit of a smile and watch one of the all-time champions run around playing in a milestone game.
Will he be a legend? That's interesting that Murph, you think he'll be elevated to legend status?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating because we'll discuss Sam Mitchell later, who said that he believes that that Max Gawn is the premier player of this generation. He said that in his post-game press conference, or it's hard to argue that he's not the premier player of this generation. 32 legends in the Australian Football Hall of Fame at the moment. So you look, Ablett, Franklin, Martin, if you're putting Gawn in there as well, you put Pendlebury in there, how many is too many.
Yeah.
It's not to take away from all of them, but that is the upper room of the Australian Football Hall of Fame. So where you draw the line, I think he's always fascinating.
Yeah, well, they're going to be players marked on different things, and obviously the Dustin Martin, the three Norm Smiths and three premierships. Scott Pendlebury just purely on the level of consistency and high play over such a long period of time. Not only just the game's record, but I think for someone who has played at that level for probably greater than anyone else has played that higher standard. Brent Harvey was unbelievable through his career. But I think, just purely just on the fact of his numbers over such a long period of time gets him to that status.
1-300-222-774, the talkback number. Damien off the SMS, Ben. Pendle's an absolute champion. Counterpoint, Colin would have played some games as well or better without him. Great to keep him going for another year, but also good to give the young guys a go too. They were pretty impressive without him, obviously, at the weekend. I know that the conversational lots, you know, would they have won if he played and everything else? I feel like, you know, and people want to go so far down this path about, you know, the fact that he's missing off 5-day breaks and 7-day breaks. I guess my counterpoint to that, Murph, for everyone that's out there saying, oh, they would have won if he played. Well, in the alternative reality, if he played off a 5-day break and got injured, then all of a sudden, all your future games, he's not playing because we're sitting here regretting the fact that he got hurt because he played off a 5-day break and everything else, and all of a sudden he never got to the milestone. And you know what would happen then? People would sit back and say, how come they didn't manage him? How come they didn't make sure he got to the milestone?
That's why we don't live in hypotheticals, but we, correct, as the media do, we love to ask those questions. But, yeah, I mean, if you get 15 or 16 games out of Scott Pendlebury, like, it's a beneficial for the football club. But the one thing that you brought up before, Benny, is how many old blokes can you keep carrying with you before you need to start turning over?
Robert in Melbourne's next to our callers. Hello, Robert.
Hello. I've got to say from the outset, I'm an absolute Collingwood tragic. I've been following the black and white since 1955, and I have observed so many Collingwood champions, Bob Rose and the Richardsons, Len Thompsons and McKenna's and all that. But I've got to declare, in my humble opinion, Pendlebury is the best footballer we've had, because one thing he does, he draws so many other people into the game.
So he's got Bucks covered, you reckon, Robert?
I beg your pardon?
Has he got Nathan Buckley covered?
Look, I think the difference between Nathan Buckley and Scott Pendlebury is Nathan Buckley was a dynamic individual player. My suspicion is, and I could be wrong, that Scott Pendlebury is somebody who lifts the team to do greater things than perhaps Nathan did. Nathan was a great individual footballer, and he has my full admiration.
Yeah. Daniel Harford spoke yesterday on the Sunday night edition of the ABC AFL Daily podcast, 5 drops a week. Listen to all of them if you can.
Wherever you get your podcasts, ABC AFL Daily.
He spoke about Pendlebury being the conductor of the orchestra, which I think is the point that Robert is making there, that he is, the conductor, but really, isn't he?
The other thing in modern footy too, and it's not the week to talk down Scott Pendlebury, we want to talk about how great he is, but about whether he plays on next year and everything else. As football nowadays is almost more and more like basketball. You need everyone defending at the same time, and Scott kind of cruises from one end of the centre square to the other. And so if this whole team defence, it's clearly a challenge for him physically as a way, perhaps in a way in the past, Murph, that it wouldn't have been when he was a younger man, for example.
Yeah, I think the way in which the game is played, and he's probably been making an art of this for 20 years, really. Like he never gets caught too wide. He's always patrolling the corridor and always standing there on a 45, ready for the ball to be used through him. So he's got the smarts of not actually running that hard. I haven't watched him live for a number of weeks in terms of just watching how hard he's running compared to what he used to do. But I imagine he's not running as far and as hard. But it's one of those things where his smarts have been able to carry him probably for the last three or 4 years, really.
You can't teach that. David from Belgrave, the next of our callers. Hello, David.
Yeah, hello. Just a quick point. Roy made an earlier good point, which is valid, that there's more game time by the older players. But I think offsetting it is that the game is a lot faster, a lot tougher. And I think that sort of equalises that argument.
Hmm. What do you reckon, Murph? Is that fair?
I think the game's different in a lot of ways. I think physically, in terms of pure hits, it's not as hard as what it was probably 15 years ago, but maybe the high-speed running is a lot harder than what it was 15 years ago. So the game changes in subtle ways, depending what the rules offer them.
It almost tends to balance out in different ways, doesn't it?
Yep, I like it, David. Good call. AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy, in the house. Your calls on 1-300-222-774. Don't forget, David Astle's evening program follows us. The super crazy quiz coming up tonight, the time lag trivia, so that follows our program on 774 ABC Melbourne. Plus, a little story about a mystery woman missing in Geelong. So more of that to come with David Astle tonight. Essendon, North Melbourne, our Mad Mondays, Carlton under the caretaker, all on the agenda. Back to the phones on 1-300-222-774. Michael is in Tasmania. Hello, Michael.
Good evening. I just want to say thank you for these podcasts. I'm loving it. I'd walk around all day listening to you guys talk, so it's fantastic. Thank you. Scott Pendlebury has been my bane as a St Kilda supporter for years. Ben, I want to take you to task a little bit.
Yes.
You have a little bit of a thing for St Kilda.
I do.
And Ross Lyon, when he says about teams playing up in Darwin and lifting the thing. Do you know how many times Scott Pendlebury's played in Geelong?
Yeah, but the reason is, Michael, is because Geelong sell their home games to the MCG because they make more on the gate receipts. Yeah.
But
that's not his fault, though.
No, it's not his fault at all.
Yeah.
Manchester City play Bournemouth tomorrow morning at the Vitality Stadium in Bournemouth. 11,000 capacity in one of the biggest games of the year.
Yeah.
Why can't Collingwood or Essendon or whoever go and play in Darwin? We have to be better than just sending off the second stringers to play in these places.
I'll answer more of that after the news, if I can, Michael. I'm happy for you to stay on the line and we can chat more about it after the news, if you like. What I was explaining to Michael or trying to explain is the fact that teams request to play Collingwood as a home game. So an away game for Collingwood. The reason being all of the Collingwood fans show up, you get a massive crowd, you get a lot of gate receipts, and it's good for your coffers. Exhibit A being opening round, where St Kilda did that, 82,000 showed up. It was their biggest ever home and away crowd, and they wanted the gate receipts. So that's why they picked Collingwood as their dance partner for that game and not North Melbourne.
The Western Bulldogs.
Yep. Yep. Or something of the like. So that is why that happened. Teams submit their request to the fixture bosses. They then put it all together. So
Is it right though?
No. So that's what I was about to say, which I think is the kind of the point that Michael was making, that, well, maybe it should just be a case of, Collingwood, you've got to go this time, and that's the way it works. So I will just say to Michael, I really, really hope that St Kilda fans everywhere get their second premiership and they get that joy. My knock on them at the moment is that I just don't think the way they're going about it is going to get them there. And I don't think the excuses that they're making largely at the moment is the best way. And it's not what I used to hear out of Ross Lyon when he said anywhere, anytime.
Murph, as a 300-gamer of the Carlton Football Club, one of the biggest teams in the land, do you feel like you missed the great opportunity to play more games at York Park or Belle Reeve or Cadinia Park in your career?
Oh, as much as I love the people, Corbin, I wish I could get around to all those grounds and play. But I think that's there's something in that. But at the end of the day, it's ruled by money and what's going to make the most money this competition.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to win out, isn't it?
1-300-222-774, the talkback number, AFL Monday, Corbin and Ben with Mark Murphy.
I've got a question for you, Corbin.
Yep.
Is Brad Scott coaching for his future in the next 3 weeks?
I fear he is. I've been a very big Brad Scott supporter for a period of time, but I feel like the next 3 weeks are so important for the Essendon Football Club. I feel like if they go 0-3 during this period, you're going to have to be made of stone to try and keep some of the noise out. The next three games they play, Richmond.
They can't lose that, can they?
They are a two-goal favourite. Then they play Carlton. Of course, that the Blues in caretaker mode at the moment. I think you'd say on form, Carlton should start favourite in that game. Then they play the West Coast Eagles in Perth. I think there are three games that Brad would probably need the team to sort of go two wins during that particular period. I don't think they can go 0-3. So I think they need to at least be ticking one of those boxes in the next few weeks. This is a chance to really see where the improvement is, what it looks like. He's in year four. Year three was a write-off, almost like he was given a bit of a free pass given the amount of injuries that they had. But this feels like we've hit a major flashpoint in the season. And now that Michael Voss has left his post as the Carlton coach, I fear for Brad that the noise is going to get louder and louder. I spoke about it on Saturday. My biggest fear as an Essendon supporter is the James Heard chorus that will start up. James has been out of the coaching game for a period of time. I know he's already been linked in some ways to the Carlton job, and really through no fault of James's. I mean, there are lots of supporters out there that want to see him back in. I worry that, with the pressure applied to Brad to basically say, hey, if Essendon are going to keep their guy, they've got to stick fat now. If they don't, they may as well get in the market the same way that the Carlton are searching for a senior coach. And the thing that worries me more than anything is if somehow Heard's linked to the Carlton job and Essendon think, oh, we better not let our favourite son go and coach to our arch rivals, and all of a sudden they'll feel like they need to swoop in and make a move. So I feel like it's going to be a big 3 weeks for Brad and for the Bombers.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, the three games there, you'd be wanting to win two of them, minimum. and then you go into the bye, which is then the chance for the club to look at the whole picture. They reset. They think, well, Carlton's a month ahead of where we're at. Do we need to start pushing ahead and looking forward to, is Brad our right, the right man going forward? And if he's not, then they need to almost get busy and start looking at what the other options are.
The other thing is a board member. Like, we're all about stability in Australian rules football, and that we're a cookie cutter type league, right? You know, follow the leader and all the rest of it. It's you know, guys like Mark Thompson and then Damien Hardwick sort of went past that point where you felt like their tenure was on shaky ground, and they came out the other side and had premiership success. And so every club nowadays feels like it's hold, rather than move on the coach too early, which is different from other sports leagues around the world. We've seen you know, what the Demons have done to basically pull the cord on Simon Goodwin, and they've got the immediate bounce under Stephen King. As a board member, surely you need to constantly ask yourself too, is what we've got better than what else is out there? So have we got, as much as stability is important, are we better off with Brad Scott than we are with John Longmire? Are we better off with Brad Scott than we are with Adam Simpson or whoever it turns out to be? So I imagine that is surely a key role, isn't it, as a board member, to basically say, is stability and is the path that we're on the best path for the football club, you know, right now and going forward?
And I think also, how long can the players keep on backing up after losing every week is almost something it's not almost something you need to think about, but as a board member, you need to think about the young players you've got on that list and how long you're willing to put up with losing, and whether or not the coach is right for the job going forward, and whether or not there needs to be a change.
This was Mason Redman on ABC Sport on Sunday following the defeat to Fremantle.
Particularly early in the game, we were not up to AFL standard in the contest. Well, not up to bloody any football standard, to be honest. We got absolutely beaten around the ball, and they were harder at us right from the outset. And when we did change that, we were able to compete. It's just so disappointing. I think the guys touched on it upstairs that if you don't bring that from the first bounce, particularly on a day like today when it's a contest day and against a quality side like Freo, you get found out, and we got found out.
Essendon fans, let me hear you on 1300 222 774 AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben and Mark Murphy. One thing I would say to that, we've heard from Kyle Langford after defeats and Mason Redman with the strong words. Yep. They get 2 hours every week to do something about it, to show us on the park, and I appreciate the honesty, but I'm also feel a little bit at this point, this is a team that hasn't won a final in 20-something years. Talk is cheap.
Yep. You can't do much more than what they're doing, though, as players after the game, and you can say all the right things, but you're right, it comes back to how you perform, doesn't it? And I think also when you've got to take into consideration the fact that players wanted to leave your football club as well, and Zach Merritt, former captain in the last 2 years, has tried to get out of there, so you've got to weigh all those things up and make a call in the back of that.
Can you see it? Are they on the right path?
Well, I think they're a fair way off it. I mean, the last probably 24 months has been pretty dire, hasn't it?
Mm. Les is in Yarraville. The next of our callers, 1300 222 774. Hello, Les.
Yes, good. Good evening, fellas. Look, I think you've been very generous towards Brad Scott. You're talking about what should happen over the next 3 weeks. The guy's had 3 years, for goodness sake. I mean, how many more chances do you need? And I feel sorry for Ben Rutten, who got shafted after 2 years, who had a better record than Scott had. And it's time to go. I mean, the contest was who was going to get sacked first. Well, that was turned out to be the Carlton coach. But really, they're showing nothing. I was there on Sunday. Fremantle aren't a bad side, but they kicked 3 goals in 4 minutes and the game was over. And they're just not competitive, Essendon, at any level. I don't think they'll win the next 3 games.
Les, appreciate your call. 1300 222 774.
It'd be interesting to know whether Essendon fans want them to win the next three and continue on this path, or they want them to lose and almost force their hand.
Even if Brad's not the guy, I'm not sure that James Hurd's the path to go down. And James Hurd's a reason I'm an Essendon fan. Like, I'm a big James Hurd fan, no doubt about that. But he hasn't been part of an AFL coaching setup recently. But
there's no way that they're going to just hire a coach. They're going to go through a process, aren't they?
You think there's zero chance that they appoint James Hurd?
No, I'm saying that if they did appoint James Hurd, that they would certainly go through a lengthy process to find out who the best coach is. And if he wants to be part of that process, then all well and good. And if he wins the day, he wins the day. But there's no way that they're going to sack Brad Scott and just hire James Hurd.
1-300-222-774. North Melbourne were the other team that had a poor defeat on the weekend. This felt like a little bit of a setback for the Kangas. Just how significant is the question? Firstly, Sonia Hood was with us on 774 ABC Melbourne on Raf Epstein's show a fortnight ago. I asked her about her pre-season comments that it's time to see more than just brief flashes from the Kangaroos. This is what she had to say a fortnight ago.
The last quarter against Geelong was the first time I saw us actually drop our heads. We haven't done that all season. Mm. We've played, we have been in every game. I would argue that the arc decision that saw the goal get paid in the GWS game that wasn't a goal and a 7-point margin, I won't blame the arc because you clean out your own mistakes in the game first. But we haven't been in a game forever to be decided by an umpiring decision. That's heady territory, that.
So they've beaten Port Adelaide. They've also got wins against Essendon, Carlton and Richmond. Have we seen more than brief flashes from the Roos?
So they're still very inconsistent in mind, and they're still a long way off the top 10 teams, really.
Yeah, they've beaten four of the bottom five and have a loss to one of those bottom five as well.
So they need a game like they almost had against Sydney, where they get over the line against a really well-seasoned team who's going to be there and thereabouts end of the season. They've got an opportunity against the Suns this weekend to find out whether or not they can do that. And they're sort of right for the picking almost a bit. The Suns have been a couple of weeks up north, which I think would take it out of you playing in that humidity back-to-back, get them to come down on their home deck down at Marvel Stadium. I think it's a good opportunity for the North Melbourne Footy Club to really put one away.
They're one win below where they should be. I'm with you. That loss to the West Coast Eagles. And
that'll haunt them. Yeah. That might be the loss that cost them a place card. in the wild card spot. It's only the sixth time since 2012 that a team has booted 10 goals to none in a quarter two. So like that's not a regular occurrence in Aussie rules football. That's sort of a once every 2 or 3 year thing. That happened to them in the second quarter yesterday. Not good.
I feel like their two best performances have both been in defeat. That Sydney loss and the Giants loss in Canberra. And the problem with honourable losses like that is when you have a stinker like they did on the weekend, it just reads as an L. No one goes back and goes, oh, yeah, but they were good in that game. And, yeah, it's it felt like a significant setback for the Kangas. 1-300-222-774. AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben and the Carlton champion Mark Murphy in the house. Do you want to touch on what you mentioned earlier about Max Gawn?
Yeah, so just interesting to hear Sam Mitchell speaking post-game on the weekend after the game against Melbourne, and this is what he had to say about Max Gawn.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, Max Gawn is... it'd be hard to argue he's not the player of this generation. I mean, there are other players that you could easily say that about, you know, Pontepelli or whoever as well, but it wasn't just... Like, in the first quarter, I think we won centre bounces plus five zip or something like that, and then... But then we lose them by 10 for the rest of the game. So the adjustment and the smarts that takes from their midfield.
So that was Sam Mitchell saying that it's hard to argue that Max Gawn isn't the player of this generation. How are we judging generation here and is he? So Gen Y is anyone born between 1981 and 1996. Is that the generation? Because then you've got to include Gary Ablett Jr., Lance Buddy Franklin, Dustin Martin, Marcus Pontempelli, as well as Max Gawn. Having him a 1981 to 1996?
To 96.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
So, or are you just saying, I mean, Gary Ablett made his debut in 2002, Lance Franklin in 2005, Dusty wasn't until 2010, Bont 2014. So are we sort of saying the Ablett's and the Franklin's are sort of an earlier generation and we're putting Max with Dusty and Bont in a different category?
Yeah.
And if you are, how are you judging it? Like, is he the player of the generation, Murph?
Well, if you mark him against those other four names, he's not better than all of those, I don't think. As much as I love Max Gawn, I think he's an absolute superstar. I think those players that you mentioned there, and Gary Ablett Jr. and Buddy Franklin and Dustin Martin, who else is the other one that you had in that category as well? I think he's certainly up there. He's in contention for one of the genuine all-time greats.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, player of the generation, there's probably a few other blokes in front of him, I think.
Legend status in the Hall of Fame, Murph?
Just got him with one today.
No, well, yeah. Kane Corns has said that he will be a walk-up start legend in the Hall of Fame, which, I mean, I thought you have sort of two legends from each generation is about the number that you look at.
So Bill James, you've read his baseball abstract, haven't you?
I have.
Where he talks about the upper rooms of the Hall of Fame and basically says, you know, best per position, you know, whatever it turns out to be. If you were to look at the greatest ruckman of all time, so, you know, clearly we can go back to, you know, Polly Farmer and these kind of guys that changed the game and everything else the way it was played. But if you look at, you know, Dean Cox is really the only other guy you would probably say in the last 30 years post-Madden. Yeah. That's sort of been in Max's category when it comes to the way he's gone about it.
And Max's resume would be better than Dean Cox by one, isn't it?
Or... eight-time All-Australian. It's phenomenal. Mm. Yeah. And you think, well, really as the ruckman, we haven't had a Brownlow medalist, I don't think, since
Scotty Wine, 92.
Was a genuine ruckman. You could argue, yeah, Adam Goods played in the ruck at times in his first Brownlow medal winning year in 03. But that's about as high an honour that the ruckman can win, isn't the All-Australian position, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
you're not going to win the Brownlow.
You're
not going to win the Coleman, you know, whatever it turns out. So it's like that's the award to be the All-Australian. I actually feel like, and I've mentioned this in the past, we talk down All-Australians way too much. We say, he's an All-Australian, he's done this. You think All-Australian's an incredible honour to be in the team of the year at any one time against guys that, you know, you're competing with everybody else in your position for that spot. So if you're a back pocket player or whatever it turns out to be, that's as good as it gets, is to put the blazer on.
I like to talk about players of the decade as an easier one to almost look at, because it's easier to sort of mark players against other players in that 10-year period. And you go back to early 2000s, I'd have Chris Judd as the player from 2000, 2010. I'd have Junior after that. And then who's going to be the next one? It's sort of hard if you're one of those guys who's
in the middle, I mean, Nick Dacos might well be that person for the 20s, if you will. Just a quick one out of yesterday as well, Corbin. We had Darcy Wilson on post-game, and, you know, he's not an enormous name in the competition, but played his 50th game yesterday against Richmond, and he is one of the young stars at St Kilda, along with Hugo Garcia, who was the highest-rated player on the ground, and he was fantastic yesterday, Hugo Garcia. I really like what I'm seeing from him. But if I'm a St Kilda fan like Michael, who called earlier, I'm not overly confident that Darcy Wilson is staying at the club. Darcy, contract year for you. Is that likely to be signed soon?
Just at the moment, just focusing on my footy, trying to play some good footy at the moment. Just seeing my manager work all that stuff out. So for me, it's just focusing on playing my role and playing good footy.
Are you keen to remain at St Kilda, though?
I just got to see how I go in the next few weeks in regards to my form. And I'm just, to be honest, seeing my manager do all the other stuff. So I'm just focusing on footy at the moment.
So I think North Melbourne sound like they're the front runners for Darcy Wilson, but he doesn't sound overly confident that he'll be at St Kilda next year.
It's a little way from yes, isn't it? what we heard there, that was on ABC Sport yesterday. Murph, we grill you about the Blues every week, and here they are on the back of a victory. You were there on Saturday night, so it's only right that we sit here and we bask in the victory of the Carlton Football Club. What did you see on Saturday night?
I saw a team that they got their moments right on the weekend, I thought, and especially in the last quarter, and their leaders stood up and played a really big part in that, but they looked more composed and assured with ball in hand, especially in that last quarter. It was almost, they flipped the switch a little bit. The Bulldogs were making uncharacteristic mistakes and Carlton looked quite assured, but I thought their contest work early in that last quarter got the ball going forward. They made the most of those opportunities and put the game away, which they haven't been able to do in many games this season, have they?
What is it about the dead cat bounce thing? So seven of the last 11 now, 7-4 the head-to-head when the new caretaker coach comes in, and really across the last four decades, the winning percentage is just under 50, which is incredible when you think about the fact the caretaker coach usually comes in coaching a team with a 10% winning record or less.
Yep.
What is it about that in footy that we've got this quirky number?
I don't know. It's a release of the shackles a little bit. Players, they go, the air's taken out of the place, so people can get back and what caretaker coaches come in and do, they strip everything back usually and go, boys, play with your strengths. These are one or two things. Go out there and think about this. Bring out the one wood and let's all have a crack and let's enjoy some football again. So players enjoy that period. The challenge now is, well, there's another 12, 13 weeks for Josh Fraser to try and do something like that. But to their credit, though, they've actually been playing some okay football of late and just not getting over the line. The Bulldogs, on the other hand, have been injury-riddled and they're almost reading too much into it as well. So they were probably right for the picking as well, but there's something about just the release of tension in the air. The pressure's gone out of the place and players just go out there and play football.
Yep. I noticed dead cat bounce wasn't used all that often across the weekend, Ben.
Oh, I didn't know whether the phrase had been cancelled.
I'd never heard of it. To be honest with you.
No. Really, it's a stock market phrase.
Wall Street term.
Yeah, yep. It basically means that sort of as a stock falls through the floor, it'll always have a little spike before it
goes back.
Keeps falling. Yep. But I didn't know. I'm being genuine. I didn't know if it was sort of...
everyone was calling it,
new coach
new
bounce.
New coach bounce or whatever else.
Bounce.
I think we're not actually talking about dead cats. I think we're still okay to say dead cat bounce.
I love cats. I've had a lot of cats throughout my life.
Oh my God. it's amazing. The footy world, we've censored ourselves in the way that we talk about
very
it.
Very strange. I didn't know what was going on there.
Speaking of censoring, anyone make the unicorn list this week? Any new unicorns?
No new unicorns. Cam Mooney called Luke Jackson a unicorn in Q3, but I think it was a win for myself. I think it's just calm down a little bit.
And it's fair to say he's the consensus unicorn, which we've touched on in the past. Ben Cameron's put the AFL football media on blast about the overuse of the term unicorn. So that is what we follow here on AFL Monday every week. Some quick winners and losers before we get out of here. Give me a winner, Ben.
Stephen King. Yep. I think he's the alchemist. I think he's making gold out of ordinary metal at Melbourne. I look at so many members of that team and they've improved. So Sharp, Sparrow, Turner, Laurie, these are guys that looked like okay AFL players. It looked like good AFL players at the moment. And then you've seen the development of Tolstra, Jefferson, Howes, JVR looks like a new player. That's Jacob Van Rooyen. So I think he's making gold out of...
Can they win it?
I'm not quite willing to go that far, but I think they can absolutely play finals and they can probably push for the
finals.
Top four.
Yep.
Yeah.
Murph, winner?
Oh, I say normal finals, not the wild card. Right. Yeah, top eight.
Yeah.
The wild card doesn't exist in my mind. I'm just working with the top eight.
Harley Reid and the Eagles for mine.
Yep.
I thought that was the game where it was a good game to watch. Harley Reid just took the game by the scruff of the neck and brought his teammates with him. And they should go to the MCG this weekend full of confidence. And can they produce something there on the big stage against Scott Pendlebury and these Magpies?
Speaking of cats and bouncing, any regrets, Murph?
Yeah.
About what?
You didn't have the cats in the premiership window.
You said that they couldn't
them
win the flag.
And I was a big endorsement of the Hawks, and the Hawks disappointed me. No end. But what impressed me was the Demons. So I'm with Benny.
Like it's that big draft coming through. That's the premiership window, which is wide open for Geelong. Any losers to chuck in there?
St Kilda are losing Darcy Wilson. Yeah. I had written down, but...
Richmond's injury list gets worse again. So 18-19 on that now. Campbell Gray with his hamstring. I actually think the Hawthorn-Brisbane stuff's a bit of an overreaction too. Yeah. So my loser is for people getting carried away about the loss.
Ooh.
Hawks coming back from Perth. The Brisbane Lions with a couple out. I think both teams will be okay.
Giants are a worry. They're just languishing, aren't they, down there? I know they've had some injuries, but to go over to the West, lose like that, and Toby Green, there's always this talk now about Toby Green, isn't there?
I think Corbin picked them to drop out of the wildcard positions this year.
Bottom eight.
Broken clocks and twice a day.
I said that about Collingwood too, so we're looking okay early.
So we got a couple right, Murph. We'll take those. So that was AFL Monday. If you want to listen along live, you can find it streamed through ABC Listen from 6:30 p.m. That's Eastern Time every Monday with Ben Cameron, myself, Corbin Middlemass, and of course, our special guest, the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy, who joins us every week in studio, taking your calls on 1300 222 774. Hope you can join myself and Bob Murphy tomorrow as we pull apart all the footy shows here on ABC AFL Daily.